It's really a pleasure to be here. It's an honor to be here. And what I'd like to do is to use our time to talk with you about one of the challenges that I face as a rabbi. I can't imagine that you get to hear about that too often, and I hope it's of interest. And what I want to do is to try to connect this challenge to some questions about how it is that we live our lives. And I want to begin, the challenge that I want to talk with you about is how is it that as a rabbi or as a clergy, we can teach people prayer? How is it that you teach people how to pray? And the thing that I want to say at the beginning is I didn't grow up doing this. What Jared may not have mentioned, I grew up a competitive swimmer. I swam in high school, I swam in college, and competed at some of the highest levels, and that was really a part of who I was. It determined what kind of foods I ate, 40% carbohydrates, 40% proteins. I guess that leaves 20% fats. Maybe it was a different, anyways, whatever it was, but it determined what I ate, determined what time I got up in the morning. I swam 2 workouts a day. It determined largely who my friends were because I spent so much time with my friends from the swimming team. It was really a very integral part of my identity. And for me, when I was growing up, prayer, I would go to synagogue, not every week, but on a fairly regular basis with my father and my mother. And I would go to the services. One thing you should know about synagogue services, they last a long time. They last about 2.5 hours. So I would get there about an hour and a half into the services. If you ever get invited to a bar mitzvah, by the way, just a little tip, you don't have to go right at the beginning, right? People sort of trickle into Jewish services, right? So I would go about an hour and a half into the services, and I knew some of the prayers, but there's a moment when the whole congregation prays together, and then there's time for silent devotion. And I had no idea that I was supposed to keep praying. I had no idea that I was supposed to keep, that I was supposed to say some words in my own heart. What to me the prayers were is they were songs. They were songs in Hebrew, a language that I didn't really understand. And that I enjoyed singing. I continue to enjoy singing, harmonizing along, but they were language, they were songs that I enjoyed. But I never really took a moment to reach out to God and to say the words that were in my heart, really until I was about 22 years old. I was disconnected enough, and I'll come back to this a little bit later, but I'm now a rabbi. When I was in fifth grade, I got suspended from Hebrew school. I got kicked out for throwing my teacher's tape recorder out the window, which is not a highly recommended activity for fifth graders. But I was very disconnected, and at a certain point, I learned how to pray. And I remember very distinctly walking into a synagogue and seeing a rabbi right up against the wall who had his eyes closed and his prayer shawl on and who was praying, seemed to me to be praying. He was moving back and forth in this motion that sometimes you will see traditional Jews do as they are engaged in prayer. And it was really striking to me. And I sort of asked myself, well, what's this person saying, right? Are they talking to a wall, right? Or are they talking to God? And what does that mean, right, to say words of prayer as we did at the beginning of today's session? And I now think about how is it that you teach people how to pray? And I want to share with you what I think are a couple of challenges and then try to think about the way in which those challenges relate to our lives. First of all, when you're teaching someone prayer, there is the challenge that I want to describe as thinking versus doing. Okay, I'm going to come back to how that relates to prayer in a second, but I'll tell you how I learned about this contrast between thinking and doing. When I was a swimmer, I was a senior in high school. I was seated first in the junior national swimming championships. going into the finals in the 100 backstroke. And I remember my coach saying to me, you know, you need to make sure that on the last length that you keep your stroke together. Okay, keep your stroke together. Make sure that you want to be efficient with your stroke, especially when you get tired. And so I swam the first three lengths. It was a close race. I had about a half a body length lead. I pushed off. And as I pushed off on that fourth length, I said to myself, I remember saying to myself, keep your stroke together. Make sure that you finish all the way through, right? I kicked, did as hard, you know, worked as hard as I could, reached back, and I had gone from first to third, right? And I went to talk with my coach about that, and I said, you know, he said to me, look, Daniel, for the first three lengths of the race, you look great, right? For the last length, your stroke totally fell apart, right? And at first, I couldn't understand how that could have happened, but I came to understand later that what I did during that race is I transitioned from swimming the race to thinking about swimming the race. On the fourth length, I wasn't swimming any longer. I was swimming while I was thinking about how to swim. And those are two very different activities. Two very different things: to engage in an activity and to take yourself out of the activity because you're thinking about it. And as we work on how do I explain the liturgy, the thoughts and the ideas of the liturgy in prayer, one of the challenges that I face is I want to explain what it is in the liturgy. What are the ideas? What's the content of the blessings which we are saying? What's the purpose of the movements, the choreography that we do? But if we are offering explanations about prayer, then we're no longer praying. What we're doing is we're having a class about prayer. And so the trick that you have to manage is, how is it that I can make the ideas and the content of this accessible without taking away from the actual experience that people that we want people to have and want people to access and to gain a sense of the mystery of what it means to pray. In that moment when I walked into that synagogue, if that rabbi had stopped praying and turned around and said, hi Daniel, nice to see you, let me explain to you what it is that I'm doing when I'm moved back and forth, and let me look, I never would have had that moment of awe of looking at this person and seeing them engaged in a practice. And he couldn't do both at the same time. And so that's a tension that we have to manage. When I think about how that applies to life, you know, I think about the way in which we live our lives, and there is a tension between planning your life and living your life. Right? I'm not against planning. I think that people who are responsible people plan things. We plan our retirements. We plan, if we are responsible, we think about and plan life and death decisions about how is it that I want people to respond in end-of-life decisions, and even we think about our burial. And if we're responsible, we plan for our children's education, and we plan for our businesses, and we think ahead, and there's nothing wrong with engaging in those practices. They're important parts of being a responsible individual. But on the other hand, if we spend all of our life planning, then we don't live our lives. We don't live the lives that we're planning for. What we do is we live a life of planning our lives, but never being present in the actual moment of our lives. And so we need to be aware of those tensions, and that tension, to me, gives me an important lesson to think about as I go about not just my prayer life, but my everyday life. The second thing which, and this is a related tension, the second thing which I want to talk about is the importance of, or the contrast between doing and doing. Okay? And what I mean by that is that when we teach prayer, right, there are, in the Jewish tradition, and I think in other religious traditions as well, there's a liturgy, Right? There are words to the prayers, and the liturgy is a combination of words, but also of actions. So there are moments in the service when everybody stands and stands with 2 feet together, and there are moments when we rise up from the book of Isaiah when the prophet declares, "Holy, holy, holy." Kadosh, 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 Adonai Tzvot, the Lord of hosts, Melech Kol Haaretz Kvodo, the whole world is filled with God's glory. In the Jewish tradition, we rise up on our toes each time that we say the word holy. So there's a liturgy, and we need to teach people not only the words of what is said, but also the actions of what is done. But the truth is that you can learn all of those things. Right? That rabbi could have been standing near the wall and with his eyes closed and saying all of the words of the prayer and doing all of those things and never said a prayer. Because there's the physical things which we do, and then there's the question of, are you present in the physical things that you are doing? There's doing and doing. There's doing by rote. And then there's being present to the life that you are living. And I want to talk for a moment about being present emotionally to your life. Jared encouraged me to share some things about myself and my own journey. And as I thought about doing that, I asked myself the question, which part of myself am I going to share? And I could share with you what I would describe as sort of my resume life. And the truth is I've had a really wonderful life in many ways, and I've had a really great 6 months. I've had a really great year since meeting Jared and his family, and since coming to this area and becoming the rabbi of Bethel Synagogue in Durham. I hope it's okay to say Durham in this crowd. That's all right.
In a derogatory way, right?
I got half my synagogue coming from Durham, so I got to be. And I'm recording this. I got to be very careful. I have been selected to be the rabbi of the United States delegation to the World Maccabi Games next year, held in Israel. I competed in those games in 1993. I recently had a book accepted for publication, and it's due to the publisher this summer, and it's going to come out next year. It's called Faith Unravels, A Rabbi's Struggle with Grief and God After the Death of a Friend. And it's a book that I worked on very hard last year, and I'm very proud of that. And even this past week, I had the extraordinary honor to travel to Washington, D.C., and along with a group of 19 other colleagues, to sit in a meeting with the President of the United States, which is an experience that I will remember for the rest of my life. So in that respect, it's been a really good 6 weeks. It's been a really full, six months. But the truth of it is that I am here in part because the other speaker canceled, but in part because I canceled my trip to Los Angeles because my son has made some poor decisions at school, and we're dealing with the ramifications of some of those decisions. And I made a decision that now was not the right week of my life for me to go to Los Angeles and spend a week of learning, but I needed to be home and a presence in his life. But I do come back to that question of doing versus doing. I can be at home and I can be physically present, but emotionally absent. And I think that many of us face this challenge, especially in the overly technological world that we live in. How many times are we sitting in a conversation, but we're not in the conversation, we're thinking about other things? We are distracted by emails and texts coming in. We are present at the table, but emotionally absent. Or can we be physically present and emotionally present to the people in our lives and to our life itself? And I think that that is a challenge that exists not only in the life of prayer, but that the life of prayer in that respect gives us a challenge for the way in which we live our lives. I'm going to finish with an anecdote from one of my favorite books. It was made into what I would say is a mediocre movie. The book is called The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. It's by Dan Millman. And the movie, it's not a great movie, but it's a story about a gymnast who gets injured and struggles to come back, but who really is struggling to figure out what does it mean to be an athlete and what does it mean to be a person. And at the end of the movie, he's engaged in what I'll just sort of describe as the performance of his life. Okay, given the form that we're in, I'll compare it to if you remember when Michael Jordan hit seven three-pointers in, I think it was the first half of the finals when the Bulls were playing the Utah Jazz, and he just sort of ran up the court and went like this, right? And he was out of mind, right? Out of body, out of mind. He was just somewhere else. So this gymnast is engaged in one of those experiences, and the voice of his teacher echoes in his head and asks him three questions. Says to him, "Who are you?" And he answers the only answer that any of us can ever give. He says, "I'm me." And he says to him, "Where are you?" And he gives the only answer that any of us can ever give, which is, "Here." And the last question he says, "What time is it?" And he says, "It's now." And in those answers to those questions, what he is saying is, I am fully present in my life. And that is the trick to me. Those are the lessons that I learned from prayer. How is it that we can straddle that tension between thinking and doing, between planning our lives but not planning so much that we don't end up living our lives? And how is it that when we do live our lives, that we can be fully present in the lives that we live? Thank you.